You're listening to Chemistry in Its Element, brought to you by Chemistry World, the magazine of the Royal Society of Chemistry.
Hello, this time we're turning to the tale of the element that held the key to masking a suntan, provided engineers with safety valves for their boilers, could make spoons vanish in a hot cup of Victorian tea, and continues to cure stomach upsets today. With the story of this remarkable metal, here's Andrea Sella.
Bismuth. A few months ago, I was struck by a mad yet irresistible impulse to cast a bell. A friend of mine lent me a template, and I headed out to Tirantes, one of the best sculpting supply shops in London. With an inviting blue entrance, the shelves are crammed with bottles and tins of resins, polymers, and initiators. There are tubs of clay, anatomical models, trays of weird implements, and books that explain how to make silicone molds of your extremities. I explained to the young woman behind the counter what I wanted to do, and she took me to the silicone resin section, where she selected some bottles. I was about to pay for my goodies when my eye was drawn to the next shelf. Stacked in neat piles were clear plastic bags of shiny metal slabs. I picked up a pack and was immediately struck by the weight. "Bismuth," the woman said, "it casts really well, and it's a lot less toxic than lead." I left the shop with a bag of that as well. Bismuth is without doubt a heavy metal. It occurs so low in the periodic table that many were puzzled by the fact that it didn't seem radioactive. In fact, its major isotope, bismuth-209, was predicted to be so back in 1949, but it wasn't until 55 years later that French physicists finally observed its decay. It has a half-life of 2 times 10 to the 19 years, which I would round off as the same as eternity itself. The density of the metal is 9.8, a little less than lead, but like water, the solid expands as it freezes and it floats on the liquid. It melts quite easily, and one can grow stunning little ziggurat-like crystals by cooling it slowly from the melt. It's easy. Heat some bismuth in an iron ladle or a porcelain bowl using a sand bath and a Bunsen burner until it melts. This happens at just 271 degrees Celsius. Then turn off the burner so that the metal cools very slowly, and when the metal freezes over at the top, poke 2 holes in the solid surface and then pour out the remaining liquid, and then leave everything to cool to room temperature. If you now break open the metal mass, you'll find gorgeous stepped cubes of bismuth with a faintly pink iridescent sheen to them, a color which arises from the thin layer of oxide that coats the metal. Just be careful. The metal's quite brittle, and your precious cubes will shatter if dropped. Bismuth itself is not very reactive. It's sometimes found in ore deposits as the native metal. But surprisingly, there's little evidence that it was known to the ancients. Aristotle doesn't list it amongst his 7 metals, and Pliny is silent on the matter. Only the Incas seem to have been aware of it. The handle of a yama-headed knife found at Machu Picchu is fashioned from a bronze which is 18% bismuth, which sounds like rather more than an accident. Reliable descriptions of bismuth only appear in Europe in the 15th century. It began to be mined in Schneeberg around 1460, and the metal soon started to be used as a kind of silvery ink or pigment, which gave rise to a craze called Wismutmalerei, bismuth painting. Painters in Italy, including Raphael, used both bismuth metal and bismuthinite, bismuth trisulfide, in their work. But what was it? The alchemist Basil Valentine rather confused things by calling it Wismut, white lead. Others thought it was a kind of tin, stanum glaciale, or étain de glace, icy tin, which the French chemist Nicolas Lemery said sniffily in 1697 was just a derivative of tin prepared by the English. Eventually, however, the mists cleared, and by the early 19th century, John Dalton listed it amongst his atomic symbols as a circle around a capital letter B. Only then was its chemistry systematically explored, particularly by the Swedish chemist Berzelius. For example, if you dissolve bismuth in nitric acid and then pour the solution into water, a brilliant white flaky material precipitates, pearl white, the basic nitrate, which from the 18th century was used in cosmetics to whiten the complexion, anything not to look like someone who worked in the sun. French druggists call it blanc de phare. It had one disadvantage, however. In polluted cities, it had a tendency to pick up sulfur from the air, turning the wearer a rather bizarre brownish shade. But because of its basic properties, the nitrate began to be given for upset stomachs, often mixed with magnesium. Eventually, this was superseded by its complex with salicylic acid, that pink slop called Pepto-Bismol, a clever combination of a weak inorganic base and an organic anti-inflammatory. But bismuth's role in metallurgy has always intrigued. It has been used extensively to make low-melting alloys, being added to pewter, the alloy of lead and tin, to adjust its melting point, or to antimony to make type metal, once used in printing presses. Alloys containing bismuth were used for safety valves on boilers, melting if the temperature rose too high. And a classic prank invented in Victorian times was to cast spoons from an alloy consisting of 8 parts bismuth, 5 parts lead, and 3 parts tin. Its melting point is low enough for the spoon to vanish into a cup of hot tea, to the astonishment of the unsuspected visitor. So what am I going to do with my bismuth ingots? Perhaps I'll cast a few spoons before I have a go at the bell.
Budding chemist and would-be campanologist Andrea Seller. Next time, to the element that gives rise to a girl's best friend. But ladies, just make sure you know where it comes from first.
It is possible to turn any carbon-based material into a diamond, including hair and even cremated remains. Yes, you can turn your dearly departed pet into a diamond if you want to. These artificial diamonds are chemically and physically identical to the natural stones, and they come without the ethical baggage. However, psychologically there remains a barrier. If he really loves you, wouldn't he buy you a real diamond?
Indeed, and Catherine Holt will be explaining why diamonds really are forever on next time's Chemistry in Its Element. I do hope you can join us. I'm Chris Smith, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Chemistry in Its Element is brought to you by the Royal Society of Chemistry and produced by thenakedscientists.com. There's more information and other episodes of Chemistry in Its Element on our website at chemistryworld.org/elements.